Warning, you cannot be the greatest of all time. A greater one shall someday come.
We now go to 123 Wrong Street in Wrongtown, where the Wrong Boys are practicing their ABCs.
A, B, C, D, P, K, Q, no,
J. After D is E, F, G.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I remember that. I
yeah, got
that
no, right before. No right? I'm looking at the cheat sheet here, so it's easy for me, right?
Yeah. Let me try again. A, B, C, D, E, N, P, number four, ampersand, exclamation mark.
I thought we had gotten the numbers out of there. Remember, the numbers and symbols aren't part of the alphabet.
Right, yeah.
Do you need to take a break? I don't want you to burn yourself out.
No, I think I got it. A, B, C, D, S, K, L, asterisk, space bar.
We're really getting out there now.
15.
Look, the ABCs are tough. And nobody's going to master them right away.
Yeah, no, I just need to, you know, part of performance is also rest. I don't want to learn bad habits.
Yeah, we'll take a break.
Ooh, doorbell.
Hey, mail.
It's the mailman. Let's go.
Perfect.
Oh, hey, cyberpunk corporate delivery man. Thanks for bringing us our mail.
Message delivered. Have a good day.
Yes, cyberpunk.
Mail delivery.
That's so cool. Oh, it's hover cycle. Just seeing a master in his craft, in his zone. I mean, it's a treat.
He delivers the mail so efficiently. Drives that hover cycle like nobody's business. Isn't even a robot. A lot of people think with that voice that it's a robot. But
no. Modulator, not. Yeah. Modulator provided by the corporate cyberpunk delivery company.
Yeah,
because they found
absolutely.
Some graph-based reason to impose that on everyone. Ooh, look at this letter. It's a little bit heavy. Piece of fan mail, maybe?
It's got to be. Yeah, it looks thick. This could be what we need right now.
Just to raise our spirits. Yeah. I mean, you work so hard on the show. Let me just, okay, pull this out and unfold it. Ooh, it's a, dear Wrong Boys.
Starting off nice.
You are leftist socialist fools. Mm-hmm. All good so far.
Thank you. Yeah.
Who hate and oppose aptitude and greatness.
Wait, does it say hate and oppose or...
Hate and oppose, yeah.
Are you sure? Oh, yeah, it does. What the...
Left-wing people do not want anyone to succeed. Left-wing just wants to tear people down and move them all towards nothingness.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that maybe this isn't fan mail.
Well, it's probably just getting around to it.
Yeah, maybe it's like an anti-compliment sandwich where it's going to start with some criticism and then deep compliment in the middle and then...
More insults afterwards.
A little bit. Yeah.
Maybe the compliment's big enough to...
I could see that.
I hate you and I hate your show and I hate people like you because of the way that you want to destroy excellence, oppose the very principle of success, achievement, or mastery, and tear down the people who make the world work.
Let me see that. Here's more insults. Oh, I've personally been wronged by your ilk for my entire life. Mm-hmm. I could have achieved so much if not for people like you.
Well, my ilk, I mean, who? I don't have that many ilk.
Let's see what's on the last page here. I hope you rot in hell and in the ground and worms eat your bodies while you're partially still alive and then you die and then everyone who thinks like you dies and then finally the world will know peace.
Well, it's creative and...
You know, I don't want to be too critical of anybody.
I mean, especially a listener.
But I just think in this instance, it's not really true. It's kind of a stereotype of leftists that they hate greatness or hate achievement or there's critiques of greatness from the left, obviously, and for good reason, I think. But in terms of competence, mastery, I think what the left wants to do is encourage an egalitarian society where everybody has the most possible basis for achieving their own personal greatness in their life. And
right. Yeah. I mean, in the positive sense, it's actually an argument for more greatness by allowing the preconditions of greatness to be shared with more people.
Exactly.
There's a factual error there.
Who knows how many Einsteins are slaving away in fields or whatever.
Yeah, fields and sweatshops. Yeah, that's what the left-wing parable, famous left-wing parable.
So it's just not true. And I mean, it's specifically for us.
Especially about us. We love greatness in the non-pejorative sense.
Yeah, we've gone on at great lengths about it.
We've embodied it in every show that we do. We've dedicated ourselves tirelessly to the creation of greatness and the promotion of greatness more broadly.
And there's even our two-sided motivational tape for achieving personal greatness.
Yeah, our contribution to greatness discourse, which, you know, we put out there.
Yeah, we put a lot of work into that.
And we charge $149.99 for it as a motivational tape because people get such great impact from it. We've probably done a lot for greatness with that tape.
Some of the other letters that we've received from people who listened to that tape, talking about all the great things that they achieved, that they did it themselves, but that we helped inspire them in some small way. And maybe
we always tell them ourselves, even what we're talking about in the tape, you know, it's not even our greatness. It's been influenced by context and environment and so on.
Exactly.
We're nothing without the context that we're in. If we've got a really holistic view of greatness that we've promoted, maybe we could send him a free copy.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking maybe this person is lower income and wasn't able to afford the $149.99 tape.
Or he's high income and he's just prioritized other things for valid reasons.
We could send him a copy with a nice little note and say, hey, we waive intellectual property. You can listen to this even though you didn't pay for it.
Actually, I've got it here. Before we write our response, maybe we could listen to the tape, refresh our memory.
Yeah,
so let's just start with side one. I'll just pop in this tape here. And you hit play, right? So
yeah, I guess maybe I'll grab some iced tea quick.
Can you grab me one too?
Do we have absolutely. We have two glasses and I think just enough ice for two.
Oh,
and
perfect. Could you refill the tray?
Of course. Maybe just turn it up and press play. I'll grab it while we listen to the beginning of the tape.
Yeah, okay, here we go. It's a triangle, right?
Yeah, play is a triangle.
And play. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Seriously Wrong Greatness Motivational Tape.
Welcome back to the tape.
Achieving your highest potential in three easy steps. Side one, the first of two sides focused on achieving your true greatness, getting mastery, being able to achieve an awe-inspiring high performance excellence, a wizardry, if you will, of craftsmanship and genius, virtuosity, aptitude that pushes the frontiers, innovates beyond even what we imagined were the frontiers, just absolutely peak performance, become top of your field.
People have been trying to unlock the secrets of greatness all throughout history. Philosophers, scientists, academics, everybody has been searching for these secrets. And, you know, we have boiled it down to just three simple steps for achieving greatness. And we're going to be presenting those to you so that you can take them into your own life and achieve greatness in your own life.
Thank you so much for paying the $149.99.
Yeah.
Without that $149.99 mail order check, we never would have been able to assemble this information and you'd never be able to achieve your true greatness. So I want to thank you so much for that. And if you're listening without paying that $149.99 somehow, you're in violation of intellectual property law.
Turn off the tape immediately and find a way to get us that $149.99. And then you can listen again. So I think any discussion of achieving greatness has to start at the very beginning with what is greatness? Let's really get to the bottom of greatness first so that we can know what we're even achieving when we achieve greatness.
Yeah, I think these three easy steps, which can be very simply shared, they won't make sense. They won't make the full amount of sense unless we kind of go over the broader concept of what we're talking about when we talk about greatness. Because I mean, who doesn't like greatness? It's like goodness, it's like happiness, it's like niceness, positiveness. You know, it's just a tautologically a good thing. To be great is great. So it's great to have greatness, etc. But what does that mean? What does that really mean? Culturally, when we talk about greatness, achieving greatness, people achieving their potential, world-class performance and mastery and craftsmanship in a way that's an inspiration to others. You know, that broad territory is what we're talking about here today and how to do it in three easy steps. But before we get to those three easy steps, which are right around the corner, I mean, for me, I kind of became tuned into this idea about greatness through watching a documentary about Michael Jordan.
Right. Yeah. The term greatness gets thrown around for Michael Jordan a lot. Like he's.
Yeah. It's like a sport. Like it's often a sports star thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Where people are like really good in their field, like the best basketball player at the time, maybe of all time, or the best hockey player at time, maybe of all time. That was like the first time where, like, sincerely, not being sarcastic, like that was the first time that I kind of tuned into like the, oh, yeah, like that really is something. Like, he gets a lot of points and he's really good at basketball. That's actually really cool. It's cool in a way that's making me feel inspired to do things in my own life. Like, how could I push myself? You know, like that was my sincere experience of like the first time that the mythology of greatness clicked in some way for me, where I was like, this is maybe worth exploring or thinking about more.
Yeah, I think too, like when we see people demonstrating like a high level of competence, doing something really well, It's just entrancing to watch, especially like the more you know about, like if you don't know anything about basketball, you turn on a game and you're like, okay, what is this Michael Jordan doing that's so different? But you know, if you know a lot about basketball and you're watching it, seeing somebody doing something really well, yeah, it's inspiring. Like it feels good to watch, something to look up to. It's like part of the reason that we have this like cultural idea of greatness is like, yes, partially we're describing a phenomenon of people being really good at things, mastering their craft, becoming wizards. But also there's like an aspect of it that it feels good to us to see that in others and then imagine that you can move in that direction.
Yeah, I think there's an intuitive sense that you can kind of feel about the difference that like dedication and focus and practice makes to these extremely high achievers, where it like, it feels like there's some practical, yeah, especially when you know a little bit about something, like seeing the excellence of a high achiever and recognizing that they're not so unlike you, except for how they've focused their energy and time and stuff. Like there is something energizing about that in a way that is, yeah, it's cool. Like a lot of people who get into chess, they'll like start keeping up with Magnus Carlsen news because he's the best chess player currently. He's got the highest ELO and wins the most tournaments. So people know things about his personal life as part of learning how to play chess now.
Yeah, there's probably not a lot of like chess news that isn't related to personality. But, you know, there's not like, oh, we discovered a new thing about kings and how they move. And they like, yeah, the news is going to be about the people, the skills, strategies, what they're doing in it. And then, yeah, what comes along with the people aspect and celebrity is like a whole other thing that gets grafted onto it. It's interesting too, yeah, thinking about like some of these fields where you can specifically say someone is the greatest, like at least by a particular metric within a particular league or whatever, like chess, somebody is winning the most chess games.
Yeah.
Whereas like in a lot of fields, like that's kind of rare where there's like a specific structure like that where you just know who's the best. It's because in most things it'd be like, well, what's the best movie or the greatest album ever made? Well, who's the greatest scientist of all time? You know, there's like some names that are going to be in the running, but people could disagree whether it's Einstein or it's the, I don't know, some person who discovered, maybe it is Einstein. He's literally the only, when I think of greatest scientists, I drew a blank on other examples. So
With scientists, like being a scientist isn't necessarily about discovering great new things. It's about testing things well. So maybe the best scientist of all time is someone that we don't know anything about because they focused all their time and energy on testing things well, and they didn't actually find out anything innovative or mind-blowing or whatever, but they did the act the same way that if you see a really good sculpture sculpting fast and accurately, it's like, wow, that's awe-inspiring. Maybe you'd see that with a scientist. Look at him test and replicate. That's incredible. Or her.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, it gets into another weird aspect of the greatness thing that mixes with the celebrity thing, is that there's like certain fields or places, like if you're in the NBA and you're the greatest in the NBA, then you're a celebrity and everybody knows who you are. If you're the greatest chess player in the world, you're a celebrity and everybody knows who you are. If you're the greatest shoe salesman, then maybe there's even like some broader numbers that collate different stores or whatever, and somebody knows you're the greatest, but like people don't really pay attention to that on some like leaderboard or whatever. And there would probably be different ways of calculating it and trying to decide what are the criteria we're defining as the greatest salesman or whatever. But in terms of like not greatest, but being great at something, demonstrating mastery, demonstrating commitment and effort, and that type of greatness that can happen in any field or in any domain and could be achieved by any number of people, because it's not like greatest, better than everyone else. It's just being great at something is, like a much wider spread thing. And it's also, it has that same impact sometimes of like seeing somebody being great at something, it feels good, feels inspiring in a way. Like, I think I've even talked about this once before on the show, but I had this experience once of just like waiting in line at a fast food place and it was busy. And there was this person behind the counter, just like so in the flow of what they were doing. They're like, boom, taking an order here, like while the cup is filling up and then grabbing a lid. And like, they're just like perfectly like doing all this stuff like so fast, like one thing into the next, and like, here you go, and boom, boom, got that done, slam the receipt in the cash register, do this, turn around. And like, they didn't seem like harried or like annoyed or like overwhelmed. They seemed like they were on top of everything. It was busy, but and like, even in that situation, part of me was like, oh, like it would be cool if they could do that with some other thing or whatever, like a judgmental fast food worker kind of idea, like, oh, maybe that's a waste or something. But it's still like inspired in me a feeling of like, wow, it's really cool watching somebody do this. Like, It's admirable.
Yeah, no, that makes me think too of another distinction between greatness, which is like the greatness of outcome versus like the greatness of process. Right. And like the masterful chiseler who you actually don't really like their statues, but seeing them do it still inspires that, like, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could do something. Maybe I could achieve some masterful command over a domain myself because I'm not so unlike this incredible fast food worker. But then, yeah, there's also mastery of the outcome. So, for example, you could have a filmmaker who's considered to be like a great filmmaker, like one of the greats or whatever. It could be the case that the set in working with this director is always chaotic and horrible and unpleasant, but the end result is the most beautiful, wonderful movies.
Right.
I think in general, not even getting into like some of the, I think, important critiques of these frameworks and how they've been used and stuff like that, there's just philosophically kind of an issue with like single spectrum analysis of a spectrum from people doing greatness or not. Like, you can use it as a ruler, you can use it as like a metaphor or a contextual cue, but it's not like, it's not really a thing out in the world, especially that's generalizable. You know, a great fisherman, do they catch the most fish or the best fish? Or do they know the most about fishing in different circumstances? Or do they have mastery over one lake? And, yeah. But all those people could be fascinating to watch and to see their expertise and passion coming together in the cathartic catching of fish. I don't know, I'm using this metaphor in particular. Yeah, I feel like the greatness meme is kind of like latching itself on like a parasite to how mastery is awe-inspiring. And it's kind of being mixed with celebrity culture in a way that is brings in some extra weirdness. Like, and hierarchical, that's the other thing we haven't alluded to, but we haven't gotten really specific on, is like the difference between greatness as in like sufficiently great versus the greatest, as in you have to beat and be better than everyone else to achieve it. There's like a huge philosophical gap there. And I kind of think there might be circumstances where this latter is true in some objective sense, that when it comes to, you know, 10-minute timed chess matches, Magnus Carlsen is the best in the world. But achieving greatness in chess, when we think about motivating ourselves, like using this awe of mastery as a motivational aid, it's probably unhealthy to want to try to be Magnus Carlsen, because the fact is that most people can't, because so much of it is based on circumstances that are beyond your control, even with total focus and mastery and so on. You can become a grandmaster, a chess wizard. I don't know what they call themselves at the top.
Yeah.
Like, anyone can probably do that. Like, probably literally anyone. But a fantasy about being the greatest is probably counterproductive in that it's an impossible goal or a nearly impossible goal. Or it's what makes that possible is circumstances and chance in ways that like you drive yourself mad to let yourself be underneath the thumb of circumstance that way.
Yeah, a lot of it is luck. It's socioeconomic status. It's like talent. It's even like desire to... Like, saying anyone could become great at chess, I think is true in terms of like, if anyone really wanted to become great at chess, if external circumstances weren't preventing them, and, you know, I imagine people in like a war zone or something, like, probably can't become great at chess unless they get out of the war zone and have the time and the, you know, to get some therapy or whatever. Like,
it would prove a disadvantage.
Yeah, exactly. But not wanting to become a great at chess is like the greatest disadvantage, because you won't go after something you don't want to do. If you're trying to become a master piano player because that's what your parents always dreamed for you, it might be a lot harder for you to do that than if it's something that you really want. So like, yeah, anybody could, if
they follow the three easy steps, which we're going to lay out in a minute.
Yeah. But like, to even try to follow the three easy steps, you have to have an internal motivation to want to do something.
Today's episode of Seriously Wrong is proudly brought to you by Goat Recordman's Greatness Playbook, 3 steps to achieving greatness.
Wow, Goat Recordman? He's the goat, the literal goat, greatest of all time, holder of all records.
Goat Recordman has 17,406 human achievement records. All human achievement records in the Wrongtown record book have been held by him for 4 years running. I heard that geneticists popped their microscopes like monocles when they saw his genes for the first time. He was born to win. And he did win as soon as he was born. Best birth.
Best birth, cutest baby competition, best swagger on first steps, most soulful first grade ballad, and all of that was just the start.
I'm so excited to learn these 3 easy steps from his greatness playbook. Goat Recordman's my hero. He's the greatest of all time.
Maybe one day, if I follow these 3 simple steps from his book after I buy the book, I can become the greatest of all time, too.
I wouldn't count on it, kid.
Go Recordman! Wow!
Here, take a copy of my book. And you at home, go and buy it in the stores. Learn to be great like me in 3 easy, simple steps.
Go Recordman, will you be my new dad?
I'm sorry, kid. I already have the record for most adoptions of all time.
Okay.
Plus, your dad might be able to set a record someday.
No, he's never set a single record in his life. He's a loser.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, kid. Here, let me tussle your hair.
Oh, thanks. If any space opens up in your adoption roster...
It won't.
Okay.
Sorry, kids say that all the time. You just have to cut it off. Your dad will have to do, okay? Goat Recordman's Greatness Playbook, 3 steps to achieving greatness on bookstore shelves everywhere. Buy it today. And now back to our show.
On the hierarchical thing, I think too, there's like, being the greatest at something is necessarily going to force you into a more limited domain where you have to start defining all these things, like the greatest basketball player. It's like, okay, are we defining that by scoring the most points alone? Are we defining it by the most assists? Are we like making a list of like 30 things that include points, assists, passes? Like,
yeah, an algorithm that combines them together.
Exactly. And then like, if you want to rank everybody, you have to collapse all of the qualitative aspects into some number. And in the process of doing that, yes, you're finding out who's the greatest at this very specific thing, at like being the top of this algorithm. But like the greatest basketball player, you know, people can argue about what that means. You know, maybe the greatest basketball player in one definition is like a person who never played basketball, but if they had, they would have scored way more points than Michael Jordan, ran circles around him.
Yeah, or someone who just played a handful of high school games and just showed this like inherent out of the gate capacity and potential, but then was like, nah, I really want to become a photographer, and never played again. And then you're adjusting based on the amount of games, the length of the career,
right,
et cetera.
Right, yeah.
Or maybe it looks different if you remove, based on the algorithm of how you treat injuries and time away and stuff like that. Like, does the player who never got an injury get an advantage in your system, or is it a handicap in the sense that it's going to be compensated somehow if someone got a bad injury that kept them out of playing and prevented them from reaching their full potential? Is that held against them or not?
Right.
These are bizarre questions, but they're inherent questions to trying to create a single scale.
Yeah, like a hierarchical. But then like the sufficientness of greatness, of like demonstrating competency, skill, passion, output, like making something, playing a really great basketball game or having a good basketball career, is like, it feels almost more real in a way, because you don't have to like arbitrarily collapse all of this qualitative stuff down into numbers and make it into a graph madness thing. You can just sit there and experience the awe of the mastery and be like, yeah, that person's a master. Like, watching a really great movie, you can be like, yes, this is an amazing creation. But then, yeah, if you want to be like, is it the greatest of all time? It's like, okay, are we talking box office? Are we talking Rotten Tomatoes score, Metacritic score? And even if we're talking box office, are we comparing it to the history of box office adjusted for inflation? Are we talking about ticket sales versus amount of dollars? Like if a 3D movie sells less tickets but makes more money than a non-3D movie, which one was more the master there? You know, it's like,
yeah, who knows? How do you compare VHS sales and streaming numbers in different eras of...
Yeah, what's a platinum record now that it's all streaming? I don't even know. I think they like made up a number of like streams or something because people don't buy albums anymore.
It's so weird in a graph madness kind of way when you're talking about what is the best music presumably to listen to. And then you're using a metric of like, how do people's affection or desire for this product, how does it manifest itself through either market expenditures or time and attention expenditures? And like, yeah, what's the difference between an album that someone listens to a lot that they don't particularly care for and an album that they really like that maybe they listen to less frequently to like save some potency for it or something, or it requires a certain type of focus to really appreciate? And are you looking for an album that has, you know, toe tap and pop hits for the car that you can play with the whole family? Or are you looking for an album that has deep resonant themes that makes you think about the world differently? I mean, all these distinctions apply within movies and television, any sort of creative art, where the difference between a jazz record and a pop record and spoken word and all, like, they're so different from each other. It's like, how could you have a best?
And it's not even just creative things. Like, I guess this is kind of creative, but going back to the science example, it's like, how do you value the contribution of an Einstein versus the other scientist that I can't think of? Like the person who invented the first computer versus the person who made one particular development in a computer that made it more like the kinds of computers we have now.
Yeah, comparing inventors, someone who invented something that we use every day that we can't imagine living out, like inventing the telephone versus inventing something that saves a lot of lives that you then selflessly give away for free, like the invention of penicillin.
Yeah.
Like for me, for my money, if I have to pick in a creative strange hierarchy between penicillin and telephones and the greatness of the inventors therein, I probably give it to penicillin because of that act of service, which I find morally great, which is entirely different than anything we've talked about so far this episode.
Yeah, totally. Like being a really great person, like not just, oh yeah, I like that person, but like, wow, they're a really great person. That's a person who goes above and beyond, who like took what they had and used it to benefit those around them. And whether that's like the world or like your little sphere or whatever, you have more of a chance of doing something that benefits the world if you're combining it with inventing penicillin or some kind of mastery in a field that is also useful to people. Because that's like a triple whammy there. You're like, you're demonstrating competence and mastery in medicine. The output of it is not just like, you know, a basketball game people can appreciate or a film that has themes that are resonant. I guess a film could even maybe verge more into having some deeper impact. But yeah, penicillin is like, yeah, you're just directly saving all these lives. And then, yeah, topping it all off with, I'm giving it away forever. Like, yeah, it's a real greatness triple whammy there.
Yeah, but on the procedure thing, I think he discovered penicillin because it flew in his window and landed on his shit without him. It was just like he discovered a type of fungus that is penicillin, and it was like by happenstance. I think that was part of his motivation too, and thinking that it belonged to the world, was that it just came to him. So in one sense, there's a greatness box not being checked there compared to, say, like someone developing a really good helicopter and improving on helicopter designs through iteration and testing and so on. Because that's a noble thing. Like, that's a noble and great thing around innovation, I feel like, is the iterative process of discovery and reinvention and testing and so on. Like, there's something inspiring and dignified about it. It's not a rapturous moment that it's like a process of dedicate. And like, that's part of what's even inspiring to me about someone like Michael Jordan, although I'm not a particular fan of watching basketball, but I do like Space Jam. And watching this documentary about him, I can't remember what it was called, but I was just like, wow, like practice, that dedication, that like focus, that like the process of cultivating his identity as this great player through all this discipline and shit like that. Like that, there's a dignified and inspiring nature of that to me. And that applies better in the development of superior fucking Gatling guns to explode children around the world as a engineer than it does for the discovery of penicillin. But I feel like the moral greatness of giving away penicillin versus the exploding children thing, I find the penicillin more inspiring.
Yeah.
I don't hold it against him that it just arrived in his windowsill.
But yeah, too, there's also something weird there with, like, you could iteratively invent a safety feature on cars, say, maybe there's an example of this in history that ended up saving some amount of lives on par with a penicillin or a new medicine or something. Like, there could be some small development like that that has that level of impact, but because it's not the initial breakthrough, it's not the sexy moment, like, it's not given the same level of cultural importance. There's still the greatness there in terms of the mastery and the competence and the pursuing of an end and achieving it. But it doesn't have the sort of cultural impact for kind of like, I was going to say arbitrary. It's not arbitrary, but it's kind of like structural reasons of like what captures people's attention, like psychological reasons, I guess. But again, yeah, that's mixing in with like cultural ideas of greatness and like celebrity greatness with broader applications of the constituents of greatness to all these different fields.
Yeah, I feel like the distinction between greatness in terms of mastery and performance and achievement and the greatness of celebrity, like there's an overlap in your sports stars and directors and musicians and so on. I mean, it's almost always going to be the case that the greatness of a non-celebrity is going to be greater than the greatness of a celebrity, just because the types of things that the emergent celebrity attention system of humanity rewards is pretty inherently out of line with sort of like moral greatness and selflessness and so on. Like, they can overlap, but in general, I'd say they have a tendency to not overlap more so than being unrelated.
Yeah, in the multifaceted greatness view of this, like being widely recognized and lauded and put on a pedestal for some achievement where maybe you legitimately did embody a type of greatness in the field that you're in, or maybe you didn't, which might be even worse for you psychologically. But either way, I think there's going to be some pretty big psychological downsides to that, where constantly being told how great you are can make you arrogant, can make you complacent. People being jealous of your status of the greatest and like wanting to knock you down a peg, come at you, can lead you to surround yourself with yes men and people who are just bolstering you up, which can make you like less likely to correct mistakes or like start missing out on necessary feedback, and you become even less great morally. Like, there's a degradation there because you're not getting the feedback that your behavior isn't like the best. And you're like, yeah, you got to constantly be on the lookout for like people who are coming at you or hate you for reasons because you're well known. And some of that can be real, some of that can be imagined, but you don't know. There can be a paranoia to it. There could be celebrity working against moral greatness. I think there's a lot of reasons for that.
I think there's like an inherent tension there. And yeah, it makes me think too of like wanting to be great in the positive sense. Now, despite all of our caveats here, I think we do want to make a case, like a positive case for pursuing greatness and so on in this tape, with further caveats coming and then the three easy steps.
Yeah, yeah. I think pursuing greatness, not necessarily pursuing being the greatest, and yeah, not necessarily dangerous. Pursuing celebrity
yeah, greatness. That's bad too. Both yeah, those but, are bad. Those are like really bad news. So it's like, I feel like this distinction is really important, that when we're talking about trying to achieve greatness in a positive sense, in a sense that isn't coming with a hefty dose of warning and caution, we're talking about achieving a high level of competence where you can achieve things that benefit people, serve as an inspiration to others, and feel good about yourself and how you used what you inherited in terms of circumstances and flip that into a benefit to the world. Like, that is a type of greatness. I want to endorse that it's possible to pursue that in a way that is advantageous to both you and the world. But I think trying to be number one in a ranked hierarchical system is, it's like a thought-terminating cliche that is dangerous to the host. It's like a mimetic hazard. It's like you're creating a psychological framework to torture yourself permanently and harm those around you unnecessarily, because being really good at chess is enough. You don't have to be number one in the world or of all time or anything like that. And if that is going to happen, if you are going to be number one at chess in the world or all time, it's going to be an emergent secondary effect of pursuing, you know, in a disciplined way, pursuing mastery of a field in a way that is more personal than what is implied by trying to be the greatest. Like,
yeah,
mastery is something you do by yourself to a great degree. It's not about being lauded. And if it is about being lauded, it's going to impede your ability to do it. I've seen things about celebrity and how it affects the mind around just like people that I know and being in creative fields and stuff.
Sure.
The people who are focused on the artwork and who love doing it and who maybe they want to make their living off of it, or maybe they wouldn't be opposed to becoming a famous musician, but they're focused on the work, you know, like those people make the best music and make music the longest. And the people who I know that I got the vibes of the weird celebrity thing and something they said or whatever, something terrible always happens to them. maybe they're in a car accident. Maybe, no, just,
right.
The superstitious. No, but it actually, you do see the negative effects, and those people don't tend to stay in it for a long time. And I don't know anyone like that who's ever made it in any way. The people I know who have made it in some way have made it in a much more humble and disciplined for the love of the game kind of way.
Yeah. I think too, it does make you more vulnerable. Like, you're joking about bad things happening to them, but if you're like desperately trying to game your way to the top and focus more on that than focused on, you know, the music, like, I want to make the best album I can make. And if people listen to it, that'd be amazing. But if not, I'll try to make the next album even better. But if you're trying to get to the top, then you're like, yeah, more vulnerable to like predatory contract record people coming at you, or yeah, like
people flattering, lying to you, or are you wronging people in ways that you're not? It actually is like that just kind of burst out of my mouth. It wasn't a very precise wording, but it is true. Like, it was me trying to put to words my experience quickly.
Yeah.
It's like the people I know who are obsessed with celebrity, something bad happened to all of them that I think of off the top of my head. And it is that kind of thing you're talking about, all these second order effects. Like, in one way or another, they were not successful in their pursuits because they were using the work as a way to chase something external, which is like mass adoration and mass awareness of who they are and so on. Also, just another thing to note is like people who get mass adoration and mass amounts of people who are aware of who they are generally report that there's a lot of parts of that that really suck. So having that be the focus, I think, is also just misguided in the way. Like, I want to give the ominous superstitious warning, something bad will happen to you. But I also want to give the more practical advice that it's chasing the wrong thing and it's going to lead you astray from greatness, which is unlike the three easy steps.
Yeah.
But before we get to that,
being the greatest is kind of hollow in a way that you like, oh, I got to the top of this ladder. And like, even without all the celebrity stuff too, like the celebrity thing comes with the monkey paw aspects of like how horrible it is in all these ways. But I think too, like reaching the top of whatever, like the leaderboard in a game or the best basketball player. Well, like, we keep talking about Michael Jordan and everyone was like, he's the greatest basketball player ever. And then he's like, fuck, now what do I do? I'm going to go try to be really great at baseball. And then he wasn't great at it, so he stopped. And then he's like played basketball a bit more. And then like, what do you even do after that? It actually kind of is scary to imagine becoming the greatest at something, because then you wake up the next day after the high wears off and you're like, okay, now what do I do? Am I going to become the greatest at something else? Probably not. It almost like robs some of the aspirational stuff out of it. But like being great at something, you're like, you can always improve. You could use it for there's a monkey paw aspect to the ranking, trying to be at the top of a ranking thing too. And now it's time for Goat Recordman on the Record.
Wrongtown Television Network wishes to indicate the following interview was recorded before the current allegations against Goat Recordman that caused him to resign in disgrace from the Wrongtown Human Greatness Foundation. In no way is this program intended to be taken as an endorsement of Goat Recordman, his character, or his subsequent and repeated actions. Viewer discretion is advised.
I caught up with Goat Recordman at his island villa, not really knowing what to expect. But what I found was a surprisingly down-to-earth, humble, great man. The world's most charming man, whose charm was on full display that day. Goat Recordman, thank you so much.
Well, I love the shoes, I do. Incredible.
Well, thank you. I mean, they're in the closet. I threw them on. No big deal, but yeah, thank you for noticing. So the new book of Wrongtown Records came out, and you are now up to nearly 18,000 records. Still the reigning champ, the GOAT, the total GOAT, greatest of all time in all categories, holding all records. Mm-hmm. How does it feel? What makes you different?
You know, I get up early in the morning and I eat well, I exercise, but really I think ultimately it comes down to greatness. Some people are born great, others develop greatness. I've done both, and I am really the humblest man of all time, which is proven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a new record that you just got.
I try to stay the most grateful man of time, but we don't know how to measure that yet.
Let's talk about your humbleness. Let's focus in on that.
Oh, do we have to? It makes me so embarrassed, humble to hear that. But sorry, go on.
If there's one thing about you that I endorse more strongly over all the other things about you that I endorse and that our network endorses, it is your humbleness, because it's why I can sit next to you right now face to face and, you know, obviously I'm in awe of you, and you know, you're on a raised little platform and there's kind of a glow about you. But I mean, other than that, it just feels like I'm just talking to anyone else, and I'm clearly not just talking to anyone else. How do you maintain that? I mean, as a child winning all these awards, how did you let it not go to your head after all these years?
Yeah, you know, I just don't let it get to my head. Mm. I just try to keep focused on achievement and
smart.
People come up to me on the street, oh, sign this, oh, you're so great, I've got a picture of you on my shirt. It goes on and on. And I just try to pretend that I just try not to think about it. I'm just a regular person, you know? I feel like I'm just a regular person. I'm small and normal like you. The only thing that's different is that I'm truly great. And people say, stop being humble. And I say, I can't. I'm sorry, I can't. I am humble. Dispositionally.
It's been suggested by some that you consider the humbleness as part of your charity work.
Yeah, I think there is some truth to that, but it really is that my charity is part of my humbleness.
Mm.
And yeah, I'm setting records in most orphans fed, most puppies saved, most cancers cured. I'm setting those records at an incredible pace of achievement, and mm-hmm. being truly great is something that, you know, I try to rise to the occasion and bring greatness to greatness. And I think that's probably the core of the secret.
Now, this might be the trickiest question that I'm going to ask you. Because you're so great and charming and perfect, garnering the adoration and endorsements of companies and politicians around the world, do you ever hate other people for paling in comparison to your greatness? You know, think, oh, what would the world be like if everyone was as great as me? I could just imagine that being hard for you.
Yeah, you know, there are haters, and anytime that you achieve greatness, you know, people, they get jealous. But honestly, I love them for it, because the sea of mediocrity that I rose from mm-hmm. is needed, because I mean, without that, what would make me great if not everyone else's low performance?
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I can't believe I didn't think of that. If everyone was as great as you, then would you even be great?
So I'm grateful for that in a holistic way.
Wow. That kind of genius. So impressive. So 6 years running, all the records in the book. How long do you think you can keep it going for? You know, forever, 10 years? What do you think?
We're already talking about my retirement. I mean, who's writing the questions? I mean, my jealous haters?
Oh, no. I just...
it won't be for a very long time. That's for sure. Very long time. Very, very long time.
Of course. Wow. Sorry, I'm distracted by those cheek dimples. No wonder if they've won so many awards.
I started winning awards for them as a baby, and then I've actually managed to keep even some of the baby dimple awards,
mm-hmm.
as these have been classified as baby dimples.
That's impressive. And that was Goat Recordman. On the Record. One other aspect of greatness that I think it's important to call into question and problematize a little bit before we get to the three easy steps, just still kind of laying the groundwork for
those. Yeah, I've just got them here. I'm butchering them, but you go first.
I think in the cultural imagination of what a great person is and what causes greatness, there's a lot of like weird ideological assumptions that have come into our culture through various historical trends and whatnot, that there's this idea of like someone being born inherently great. And they're like,
yeah, even reading a little motivational book in prep for this episode, looking for inspiration, they were bringing like inborn genes and stuff. I was like, ooh, what the fuck?
Yeah, like the greatness gene, or
wanna,
like,
I don't want to read that shit, dude.
If you look at the greatness Wikipedia page, they're like, early greatness research focused a lot on genetics and intelligence as like the vector through which greatness got. So it's like, yeah, we've done a whole episode on IQ, but we're going to use this test-taking measurement of how good you are at specific domain specific things, again, like collapsing all this qualitative stuff into one number and then being like, that is what greatness is. And I mean, obviously that's not true, and people who are great at things don't have to have high IQ, but you could broaden it out to like other genetic, like, oh, there was a basketball set of genes that Michael Jordan had that made him the best at basketball. And like, the strong genetic determinism case on greatness, I think, is like completely untrue, obviously untrue. It ignores so much other stuff that's going on in terms of the culture people are born into and their development through like their early development in life and what advantages and disadvantages they have, whether they're encouraged to pursue their interests and their goals or not, or whether they have the time and the resources available to them to pursue things.
That's evil greatness. That's like pursuing too strongly any sort of genetic. There is in some ways some overlapping genetic components to any aspect of life, but including like high performance. For example, basketball players have an advantage if they're taller. Height is genetically connected, although not determinant of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But getting into like the concept of like greatness genes being passed down in a family in a special way, the way that that is a lie is by including stuff that's not true, but also by leaving out a lot of stuff that is true, like you're talking about. And it's dangerous for how it's been used. This evil concept of greatness, I would strongly advise against getting into that.
Yeah, yeah. The idea that like it's preordained at birth, or like, I mean, before genetics, there was maybe like chosen by God, or like that's like a higher born family, they have good blood, or like all these weird.
Yeah, genetics is like the framework that's used to rationalize this earlier hierarchical assumption of human difference.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, genes are the expression of this difference of greatness and these terrible thief family versus a noble, great.
Yeah,
it's nothing aristocrat to, family or whatever.
Nothing to do with the circumstances they were born into. They just have the thievery genes and they will never be great. And yeah, besides being untrue, besides being like an evil ideology, it is also pretty demotivating. Like one of the reasons I wanted to get into this before the three steps is right. That if you think of yourself as someone who could never achieve greatness because you weren't born with it, because, you know, oh, I'm stupid, or I always mess things up, or I'm a piece of shit, or
I'm not just a piece of shit, I'm genetically inborn a piece of shit.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
What a way to live.
Not circumstantial. It's just, it's part of who I am on a deep level, because
in the cells of my body, because of the way that DNA is being read by them in a way that is, yeah, that's what a prison to build for yourself. And it's not even based on anything like,
yeah, yeah. I've been taught that this level of achievement and contribution and competency is the realm of a select few who were given lottery numbers before birth that I just didn't get. And so, yeah, if you're going into it with that mindset, you might not even have the motivation to like properly work the three steps.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to achieve greatness. You're going to be falling short of greatness if you have this false idea of greatness weighing you down. But, you know, watching Michael Jordan at peak performance will be not inspiring because you're not going to see yourself in him the same way. He's going to be, oh, it's like, yeah, this godlike outsider. if only a magic wand was waved when the sperm met the egg, I would have been that.
It can be demoralizing instead of inspiring.
But I think that's not the case at all. And like to just acknowledge and make sure that we're making the right type of measured claim here. Like the difference between a tall basketball player and a shorter basketball player does, I think, strongly affect greatest. That is, which is going to be the basketball player that scores the most points and so on, wins the most championships and so on.
Yeah.
There's going to be a correlation there that the partially genetic, partially environmental determinant of height is going to impact the competition at the highest tier if you're going to rank them. But even a very short person could pursue greatness even within basketball and be part of winning teams, and they could change the game, you know, like let doors open. So like, I think just using the height and basketball thing as an easy metaphor for a broader spectrum of things that might have, you know, like some degree of interaction with genetic components in terms of performance, greatness is available to, I think, everyone in every circumstances. It's just greatestness is just like, I guess it's just not. It's like,
yeah.
There's people with a variety of capacities and potentials and so on listening to this episode right now, but none of us are probably going to beat Magnus Carlsen at chess over a long period of time.
Yeah, and even if we were all like taken under the wing of a billionaire who began training us today, you know, and you just spent the rest of your life on it.
Yeah, that would be your best shot, but it probably, yeah. And it's not because there's some chess genetic thing within him. It's a mixture between a variety of factors, his upbringing experiences, his developmental trajectory, and so on. And then also there probably is some variations within the expressions of human genetics that would give you an advantage or disadvantage in terms of mapping out all the potentialities of a board, that it's not, say, evolutionary advantageous for every single human being on Earth to carry that with them. And that within the beautiful variations of human potentials and development, and the people who tend to be at the very top of these fields are going to have those little like minor untrackable combinations of markers and so on. And just, you don't have to get hung up on it or weird about it. It was probably the case because that's sort of roughly how genetics works.
Yeah. There's like the Michael Phelps swimmer guy who has like kind of webbed hands or something, or like extra long limbs, or like a few like weird genetic things that make him a really good swimmer. There could be versions of that that like, you know, make somebody like, we all have different skills.
Slightly webbed fingers and long limbs will, if you put a lot of time into it, give you an edge over other people who put a lot of time in swimming, specifically certain types of swimming.
Yeah.
And not swimming for duration, but swimming for speed and so on. And similarly, there might be aspects of the expression of human genetics through a lifetime of experience and development that gives you a specific advantage around the nature and nurture combining, gives you an advantage in chess, but that doesn't necessarily give you an advantage of all types of chess and all circumstances or all types of games, or especially not intelligence generally. It's not like Magnus Carlsen has some sort of special genius gene and he has an advantage in any sort of intellectual pursuit.
Yeah.
Everything about humans has a genetic component because we are comprised of genes. Our basis is comprised of genes, but the places that these exist, the example of Michael Phelps' long arms and so on, that really only matters if you're a top performance swimmer going against other top performance swimmers. So there's a lot of people who have these types of advantages that may not ever become relevant to their lives in their jumble of genetic information. So the idiotic pseudoscientific idea of genetics, that's part of the evil idea of greatness, connects genes to hierarchy. There's like better or worse genes, and it's passed on directly from generation to generation. But that's not actually how genes work. Genes are different from each other, and they interact in complex ways, and they're not directly one-to-one heritable. Their emergent effects aren't one-to-one heritable. For a particular skill, there might be a variety of genes, and they might cascade in different ways, or you might have certain emergent things that only happen from, you know, one gene comes from the mother, one comes from the father, and then the emergent property of those two genes together creates a special capacity, like the webbed fingers and long arms. But then you might have that person who has those advantages for swimming. It doesn't exist in their kids because the quality is actually coming from multiple genetic sources that are separated again in the reshuffling of reproduction. We won't get into every detail about this.
Yeah, and it's just like so disgustingly oversimplified. And I feel like everybody knows this and everybody gets it on some level. You know, you ask any person who's done something that they're proud of, the story of how they did it, there's going to be a mixture of things that are circumstance, like where they lived, where they grew up, who their family was, who their community was, the broader culture at the time, what were people into, what kind of technology existed or didn't exist, what resources were available to them, how were they treated by their parents, how did they handle their school experience, what were they good at, what were they interested in, what did they spend their time on, what did they not spend their time on, what opportunities were presented to them, what random bits of luck or bad luck helped them or hurt them along the way. It's always like going to be a combination of so many factors. It's never just like, oh, here's my life story. Chapter one, I was born great. And then chapter two, I achieved everything. The end. It was, everyone just knows that's not how it works. Unless they're trying to like justify weird hierarchical ideas. And then all of a sudden, they pretend to think that that's how it works.
We interrupt this program for some breaking news. Goat Recordman's celebrity trial, called the greatest trial of all time, is happening right now. And unexpectedly, Goat Recordman is going to be taking the stand to defend himself. The charges? A criminal enterprise to sabotage and even murder competitors from setting their own records, spurred by a paranoid and resentful spiral after losing the record for carrying an egg on a spoon for the longest time on a treadmill. We now go to the courtroom where Goat Recordman is taking the stand.
Mr. Goat Recordman, you have claimed that the charges against you are complete fabrications.
That's right, and I would know because I've closed more criminal cases than any other attorney in history.
Now, we've heard from your associates that when the 43rd annual record book was published and you had lost that one single record to someone else for holding an egg on a spoon on a treadmill, that you flew into a jealous rage, that you became obsessed, that you spent weeks on the treadmill with a spoon trying to take back your record.
I didn't try.
And when you couldn't do it, it was like something inside you broke.
Look, it's one record. I don't see it as approaching anything my level of greatness. It's one record. I don't have to have every record. And I certainly didn't try and fail to set that record. So I just let it go. And it's a fabrication because, now I'll tell you, the person who told you this has long harbored a resentment and a jealousy towards me because of my high level of achievement.
Your Honor, I would like to direct the jury's attention to Exhibit 43A. If we can just play that video, please. So now this is you, I believe, on day 20, according to our source, of trying to break the record. We can see here you're sweaty, you're running with the egg on the spoon. There's a picture ripped out of the record book, taped to the wall, of the person who won your record smiling.
Well,
that you seem to be using to motivate yourself, and you've sort of crossed the face off.
I don't recognize this video. I haven't seen it before, and I don't think that is me, or it's not a real video or something.
Confirmed not false by forensic analysis.
Well, you should have me look at it because I'm actually the best forensic analyst of all time. And
that's actually disputed, but...
Who disputes that?
There's some real up-and-comers in the forensic analysis field. Mr. Recordman, beside that picture, there is a macaroni rendering of your own face. Is it not true that after you lost this record, a small child mailed you a letter requesting their macaroni back because they no longer saw you as the goat?
I mean, some of those details are true, that I did receive a letter from a child who did say that I was no longer the greatest of all time and that he did request the macaroni back so he could give it to the true greatest for when they eventually arrive. That is true. Mm-hmm. Yes. No one likes to hear that, but did that affect me emotionally? No. I'm the most stoic man of all time. I am the most humble man of all time, and I have more child fans than anyone else.
Is it not true that you spent months having your assistants give this child the runaround, refusing to return his macaroni painting because you believed that once you reclaimed the record, the painting would remain yours as well?
I respect the child's opinion, and he did get the macaroni back.
So you never called this child a hater?
I did call the child a hater, not to the child, but...
You talk about haters a lot. We've noticed control effing through your speeches. The word hater is actually more frequently used in your interviews, speeches, books than any other word.
Well, when you achieve a lot, you do have a lot of haters. And I think
some might even say you're obsessed with your haters, with proving them wrong.
Well, if you look at the amount of hate I get and how much I talk about it, it's actually a very small fraction of the hate that is addressed.
How do you respond to your haters who say that you should change your name to Ghost Recordman, spelled G-O-A-S-T for the greatest of a specific time, rather than the greatest of all time? Will you be changing your name?
No, I won't be changing my name. And they it's creative. I guess greatest of some time is in a way technically true, and it doesn't bother me. And you know, the egg on the treadmill, I can do it if I tried. I let him keep it to honor his widow after he died in that accident. Okay. That mysterious accident that I know nothing about, okay?
Your Honor, I would like to direct the audience to Exhibit R. That is the newly uncovered tape we have of Goat Recordman detailing to his own plan, admitting it, cackling and contradicting everything you just heard him say. Can we play that now?
This macaroni kid, man, he's a hater. No one's coming close. You know, this is the thing, is that people don't understand. It's like, they should be thanking me because I've shown what we, you know, and a criminal enterprise to sabotage and murder competitors. Yeah, I think it would make sense. And I am planning and working on executing total human extinction, because if I'm going to be the greatest of all time, then a greater can't come. Time has to end, and I'm going to do it.
Mr. Recordman, what do you have to say for yourself?
I understand what this is. This is a show trial for the lowly, non-record-setting, unspectacular, to gather up and chop down the tall poppy. I did too much for too long. I showed my greatness too much, and the response is, oh, let's send him to jail for being great.
Mr. Recordman, is it not true that you believed that the only way to maintain your status as the GOAT was to extinguish all human life? That simple sabotage was not enough.
I mean, what would you do? What would you do? Let's not be naive, okay?
So you admit it. You admit to all of it.
Maybe we have peaked as a species. Maybe human extinction isn't such a bad idea. Death penalty for me. How about death penalty for you all?
One last question, Mr. Recordman. What do you call the lawyer who just got the previous greatest lawyer in history to confess to the greatest crime in history? Would you not call that lawyer the greatest lawyer in history? It's a yes or no answer, Mr. Recordman.
Second greatest. The greatest is Goat Recordman.
So I think before we get to these three easy steps for achieving greatness, I think talking about the evil version of greatness, there's this embedded idea of hierarchy. There's this idea of superiority, that people who are better at a thing are better in a deeper way. I think that's part of a drive for evil greatness too, is a drive to be better than other people and gain power over them or advantage over them in some way.
Yeah. And misinterpreting, the fastest runner doesn't get to boss other people around. But sometimes in our cultural idea of hierarchy, these two things are flattened. We even use metaphors often of domination or supremacy when you're talking about sports players, which is a little bit weird when you remember that actual literal domination is one of the most evil things that you can do to another person. To actually dominate someone and control them and have power over them. As a metaphor, it's an inapt metaphor to talk about scoring more points than someone else at hockey as a form of domination. Because domination is when you control someone's life against their will.
Yeah, and the mixing of these two things leads people to get confused sometimes and think that a person who is just doing dominating, who is just exercising power and advantage, has achieved greatness, that they actually haven't. Elon Musk is a good example of this. Like, he didn't invent Teslas. He didn't create PayPal. He didn't, you know, invent spaceships. Like, there's so many things that he didn't do that he gets credit for because he has a lot of power. And he's able to sort of position himself in this cloak of a type of greatness and build this mythology of his own greatness while completely relying on all the great contributions of the people that he, you know, has either employed or bought the company from, that it was already existing. And there's a way in which, like, this dark greatness, this evil version of greatness, because it circles around superiority and gaining advantage and this idea of the greatest and being the best and dominating other people, it, yeah, lends to a type of confusion where domination replaces the actual mastery and skill and devotion development that a better type of greatness revolves around.
Yeah, another aspect of the evil version of the idea of greatness that relates to this is celebrity, that tons and tons of people are going to look at this high performance and be inspired by it and focus like a point on whoever happens to be selling sports shoes on television. Like, because that attention is there, they become a hero. And maybe there's, you know, not to be cheesy, but maybe there's heroes in their own backyard that they could look up to that might be more advantageous. It might create a better, it might give people a type of mastery heroism to follow that isn't tied up in all the weird trappings of celebrity. And thinking of Elon, again, one of these big trappings, I think, is like the yes men problem and the idea that people who are adored by masses, that are seen and watched by masses, they might select the people around them to be people who are going to flatter them. And then from that, they may become detached from reality or impatient with people who have a normal perspective on them, which might be, I agree with you sometimes and I disagree with you sometimes. That could feel like an imposition to them.
Right.
And it can make someone like Michael Jordan, you know, angry at people who might criticize his performance as a fan or whatever, being like, oh, he missed that shot or whatever, and have this like real like seething resentment or resentment rooted in a type of self-superiority. That's like, who are you to say that the almighty Michael Jordan should have sunk that three-pointer? And maybe it is rude of them to say that, but also it's part of public life.
Yeah, there's a way that, similar to how like striving for power and advantage and superiority over people can have these negative aspects to it, striving for fame and importance or glory, like, I want the adoring masses to be surrounding me and looking up to me and inspired by me. And it's going to have negative psychological effects on, I think, most people, unless you're like actively doing work to try and prevent that. And even then, it probably still would, depending on the scale of it. I think too much fame, too much adoration, too much glory is going to have morally crippling effects on most people. And so, yeah, kind of evil greatness vision there is like the sort of combination of those two things, is like a very famous, very powerful person who's surrounded by yes men and who wants to make their mark on the world, but has also a completely devoid of any moral barometer and of any true mastery of a useful skill that will be helpful to their friends and neighbors and community in the world. So yeah, that's like your fascist dictators, your extremely powerful, extremely famous, extremely arrogant, quote unquote, great men of history or whatever.
Yeah, no, and I think we can acknowledge that often individuals have an outsized impact, or an individual might be impressive in their field and so on, without getting into the evil idea of greatness, idea of lone solitary greatness being like the mover of the world, or like that's the story, that just the person, an individual person, is in reality not the big story. Although it might be true that individuals have, there's something impressive about an individual or admirable about someone. So it's kind of like a spectrum where you have, on the most extreme side, you have a hard genetic coded hierarchical view of the world where there's above and below and performance is tied to the right to dominate and so on. Like, that is tied into the evil idea of greatness. And on a spectrum, the softest end, the end that we see most in our lives, is the concept of favorite or best. It's the idea of like objective bestness and these comparison hierarchies that are taking complex things and flattening them into single things. So
yeah.
I'm not taking issue with the idea of people having favorites. I'm taking issue with the idea of there being best without a bunch of caveats attached to it in an interconnected web of bestness that is a small part of the story compared to the story of like maybe greatness.
Yeah. An obsession with ranking things and a type of graph madness or number madness.
It is a type of graph madness.
That ignores the qualitative aspects of everything in favor of applying this overly broad social idea of like best, better, greatest to something that is much more in practice specific and domain limited, like the person who scored the most baskets in the NBA or whatever versus the greatest basketball player of all time. There's a conflation that happens there that can be pretty dangerous.
Yeah, people argue about like who's the GOAT, the greatest of all time.
Right.
And that's harmless in so far as they're talking about who is their favorite. But I think a lot of people, they're like something about picking favorites, it sounds so cutesy that they want to argue about what it like.
Yeah.
They want to argue about what is the best movie, who is the best director, who is, because admitting that they have a favorite feels small to them and they want to be like this objective knower.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because that creates so much fucking conflict, especially with certain personalities that they become their own favorite literalists in a way where they're willing to actually have a big fight about whether one genre of movie is better against the universe than another or whatever, or right. one, whether a director is good at direct, like, what's that called? Literalism, you know?
Yeah.
Mistaking the map for the territory and so on.
That's kind of like, I think, the layout of some of the trappings of the pitfalls of greatness discourse or the negative ideas of greatness, what we've been calling evil greatness. And then there's
like a little little twirled mustache.
Yeah. If there's like two, like a greatness on your shoulder, that's the more devil one with the mustache and a pitchfork.
Yeah.
And then you turn to your other shoulder and you have like the good version of greatness.
Little angel greatness playing a harp and saying, oh, achieving mastery in service to others and achieving the potential that you want to achieve in the world through discipline, perseverance, and focus. That's something that you can really identify with in a positive way to do more for yourself and other people.
Yeah, like that feeling of awe that can be inspired by seeing somebody who's demonstrating skill and excellence in something can be a motivating force for you. And there's like something really beautiful about that relationship of seeing somebody else demonstrating competence and using that as a way to say, hey, I can be more like that, and taking inspiration from that to go out into the world and do things that are like meaningful to you personally and meaningful to the people in your life and helpful to your neighbors, community, the world, whatever it is, whatever thing that you think you can contribute, that you can get better at, demonstrating like a dedication to that, that's like greatness. And that's a type of greatness that is available to everybody through three easy steps that we're so close to now. And it doesn't rely on like ranking. It doesn't rely on superiority. It doesn't seek glory necessarily. It's just about like getting good at stuff and being helpful and meaningful.
Yeah. And it's like developing greatness. There's that cliche of like, don't compare yourself to other people. Compare yourself to yourself in the past. And mm-hmm. I think that encapsulates some aspect of positive greatness. There's like, it's greatness against the self. It's not greatness against the world. It's not greatness over. It's an emergent, growing form of capacity and types of competence and craftsmanship and mastery within a certain domain. Yeah, I think also related to this on the positive side is like the spirit of innovation, of inventing and innovating and changing games. And like, that's one of the positive aspects when I think about like the mythology of greatness is like, sometimes people can bring a new perspective on something, whether it's in art or science or elsewhere, that changes the game because they saw things differently. They laid it out a different way and it revolutionized the space.
Yeah.
And I think that's another beautiful thing. Like, it's another inspiring thing. It's another thing we can cultivate in ourselves, is the desire to look beyond the rote repetition. Like, don't just play the same music faster. create a new genre, you know? Like, it's not a contest who can play music the fastest.
Yeah, yeah, or like be the most perfect metronome on time. Like, that can be a great skill to have for sure, but there can be, it's interesting there, yeah, there's two kind of axes almost. There's like gaining competency at the skills in this particular field as they are currently understood. And then there's being able to find a new way to do the particular thing that you're trying to do, or find a different thing that you can do to achieve the end that you're looking for. That kind of stuff, the novelty is, I think, yeah, an aspect of greatness that's worth recuperating. It serves as like an aspirational thing, kind of in the same way that the excellence, the competency does. And then another aspect, I think, of the positive side of greatness is like that, I guess, moral greatness is how we were talking about it before. But I think there is something to trying to be a great person, trying to be a good person, trying to be a person who has integrity and who is honest and who genuinely is working for the benefit of themselves and other people. There's like a kind of full roundedness, greatness that comes from like not just trying to do good things in a good way, but being a good person as you're doing it.
Yeah. And that's the type of greatness that unfortunately too often doesn't get credit. But that's also another aspect of good greatness, is the humility and the not needing to be seen and so on.
Yeah.
So maybe it is fortunate and not unfortunate that is the case. So yeah. So for all those things, I mean, now we're talking about real greatness, like, you know, the greatness that we co-sign.
Yeah.
And so in achieving your personal highest potential using the Seriously Wrong Greatness Motivational Tape, we have three tight, easy, quick steps to achieve your personal greatness, complete your greatness journey, achieve that high performance and mastery in service to others, create that identity of someone who is aspiring to greatness, inspired by others and inspiring others to contribute to this beautiful, incredible tapestry of life at your highest potential in a way that you can feel good and look back at the end of the day and say, I didn't leave anything out. I didn't leave anything on the table. I went all in for my passions, for my desires to make the world a better place. And I know that I did everything I could to make that happen. And I achieved the greatness that I wanted to achieve. I reached a sufficient level of greatness in a way that I feel proud of. And I don't have the regret of feeling like I missed an opportunity by not achieving that greatness. And that's what these three easy steps are for.
So yeah, let's dive right in. Step one. Oh, actually, I think we're running out of time on this side of the tape.
Oh, yeah.
So
two-sided tape.
We'll wrap up this side of the tape and, you know, these people can just flip it over and they'll get the three easy steps right away.
Yeah, we'll just get straight into that on the other side of the tape.
Yeah.
But for this side of the tape, we'll say, see you soon, momentarily.
Yeah.
And just anticipate, I guess, just build up some anticipation during the tape flipping process of what these three easy steps might be and how they might help your life.
Yeah, this is actually perfect, I think, because you can kind of take this moment as you're flipping the tape.
Yeah, it's just a moment. It's just a tape flipping moment.
Yeah, it's a quick, you paid $149.99 for this tape, so you can easily just flip it over. Mm-hmm. And while you're doing that, you can kind of carve out three spots in your brain, like sort of make a blank sheet, three easy steps, and then one, and then a space, and then two, and then a space, and then three, and then a space. And you just kind of make those buckets in your mind so that they can be easily filled with the three steps.
Yeah, and you might want it to be a big piece of paper for these steps, because although they are small and easy, the philosophical basis of them, I think you're going to want these are load-bearing ideas. I mean, you're going to have to reorganize other aspects of your thought around. I'd say get ready for that and just anticipate and just feel that desire to know connected with the knowledge that you will soon know, which is a very satisfying situation, especially when you flip over the tape, and you can prep for that now.
All right. Yeah. We'll see you on the other side of the tape.
Aloha, which means both hello and goodbye, which is appropriate for the situation.
And I'll just pop out that tape.
Wow, that's a great first side of our greatness tape.
Yeah. There's no way that hater heard that tape and then wrote that letter. That's going to convince him for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And especially once we flip it over to the second side, it will dispel any concerns this hater might have. So yeah, we just got to I guess, flip it over and then hit play on that.
Yeah, I'll get started right on that. I'll flip it right now.
Oh, actually, before that, what if we just get up and stretch a bit? You know, just sitting here listening to tapes. I mean, we're going to have worse circulation, and I think there's a variety of health benefits if we do bit of stretching.
Sometimes it's good to just lift your arms above your head or move them in a big circle.
Mm-hmm. I will just pop out this surveillance tape. So those are the targets. The wrong boys think they're so great, but they're not. And that's why I hired the greatest assassin of all time to take them out.
Yes, Sean and Aaron of the Seriously Wrong podcast. I know them well. As an assassin, they'll be some of my greatest targets.
They're my greatest rival in the podcasting space. Rascal Boy Comedy Hour, I do interviews, little sketches, Marxist statistical analysis, monologues, guests. I've got too many problems with them to name. If you're like, why is a podcaster going to do this? I got my son listening to them. I ran into Aaron at the store. He forgot my name. I was like, hello, we've met before. And we've been saying forever, like, oh, we're going to do a collab. We're going to do a collab. But it's never happened. It's been like years.
Before you hand me the money, I need you to know, once this transaction happens, there is no stopping it. I'm not a machine that you can turn on or off. I will be untraceable, unfindable, unstoppable. The wrong boys will not see me coming, and they will not be able to stop what's coming. And what's coming is their death.
I understand. Here you go.
It's a deal. The wrong boys will be no more, and the Rascal Boy Comedy Hour will become Wrongtown's top podcast.
Will Sean and Aaron flip over the tape and listen to the other side? Will the three steps contained on the tape to achieve greatness help the people of Wrongtown and dissuade the hater from his letter? And will the greatest assassin of all time succeed in his mission to assassinate the Wrong Boys and make sure that the Rascal Boy Comedy Hour becomes the greatest podcast in Wrongtown? All these answers and more on Side 2. Turn over the tape now.